Welcome to The Greatest, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Greatest. I'm Megan Gailey, joined by my husband and co-host CJ Toledano.
Hello, how professional. Sounded very, very official.
Well, I'm worried because I have people tweeting at you that I sounded drunk and or high on the last episode, and it was 9 a.m.
I love
it. And so now I think I was stone sober. I'm stone sober right now. Now I'm worried I've phased into a part of my life where I just have drunk lady voice, even when I'm sober.
Well,
hello, King.
The guest that we have,
you like Baby Roosh,
is maybe not the best person to be like, yeah, completely sober all the time and very well behaved.
You're supposed to give guests nice intros. One of our dearest friends.
No, I was going to. I was just prefacing, you know, some history here.
Long overdue having him on the pod. I'm sure he's going to have some thoughts about that.
Probably his sixth sports podcast of the day.
My former roommate. I mean, gosh, and just like TikTok famous too.
No, this guy, he is killing a TikTok, YouTube, great social media presence, comedian we know and love and came up with, Joe Kilgallen.
Thank you. I love you both. So it's great to be podcasting with you. Easily my favorite couple in the world.
Really?
I mean, besides myself and my wife.
Yeah.
Like, you had a great tweet today where you're like, this is my husband whenever I like clap back at a heckler. And I'm like, damn, that's cute.
Yeah. Well, it was like kind of made. I don't know if CJ's.
No, I have. I've been in the crowd and like, hell yeah. Someone
you do?
Else is getting yelled at by my wife.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, get him, you know, like pro woman. But you're just like for equal opportunity, me freaking out.
A little bit of both.
Joe, congrats on the no hitter.
Yes, that was mostly my doing. I actually saw a no-hitter. Jake Arrieta threw one against the Dodgers in LA. I was there. It was amazing. And then today I just watched in my garage like a Chicago scumbag.
But that's where I almost think sitting in your garage is the perfect place to watch a Cubs no-hitter. For the fans at home who don't know Joe, there is no bigger Cubs fan. It's borderline mentally ill.
But what the
thing
the
is,
hell?
They are good and they did win recently. So it's not like a Browns mental illness. It is like a kind of successful mental illness. But yeah, I mean, just even looking at you right now with your setup, you look like a Cubs cartoon character.
I don't know. It is getting to the point where I'm hoping something's got to give because it affects my mood and I can't be a father of two and have like a Cubs loss make me be a bad dad.
I think you can in Chicago.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, so we're recording this on Sunday, first day of the NFL season, and I was getting really upset about, you know, something the Colts did, and CJ was like, oh my God, I forgot that this is what happens to you. Like, with the Pacers, I, like, love them, but there's constantly, it's like, oh, okay, then there's another game in 2 days. Like, it's just, like, a quicker turnaround, so you don't have to be sad for as long, and I also don't think of, you know, like when you look at the NBA, it's like, I don't think the Pacers are going to win. And when you look at the NFL, I don't really think the Colts are going to win either, but it's like better chances. So I get more invested and psychotic.
I get it. And the NFL owns a day of the week. Mm-hmm. Your dad, I want to set a great conversation with your dad, Megan, where he said to me, he's like, no, Mr. Kilgallen, you're not one of those fans that won't go out to dinner because the big game's on, right? And I'm like, no, I am. I've been like, hey, you want to go to this thing? I'm like, well, the Cubs are on, so I'll meet you there after. And he's like, that's crazy. And I was like, no, I'm that guy.
And so is that why you feel like you want there to be a change so then you can start enjoying your life more?
I mean, I don't know if I want there to be a change because it does bring me a lot of joy, but it also brings me a lot of anger at the same time. So I don't know what the change might be. I think I'm a big fan of the Cubs president, Theo Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a sneaky suspicion that the ownership is going to screw him over somehow because his contract's up in 2 years. They're going to disrespect him or do something like that. And I could see myself being like, you know what? Nothing will ever top 2016 as a Cubs fan. It's time for me to follow Theo because I'm such a big fan of his. And maybe I could let go of some of this like insane psychotic breakdowns I have when the Cubs don't win.
There's no way that's happening. I mean, Theo is so great though. He is the only GM I can think of that had a stalker. Like that is so impressive.
I don't think I know that story.
To just be, you know, you're just the guy behind it all. You're not even like front facing camera videos. That like, he is known, but wow, that gal, She like wound up on his front porch.
What happened?
This woman left him.
I don't know all the details, but Theo's a young, good-looking guy. He was a Yale graduate who won for the Red Sox back in 2004 when he was like 29 years old. So everyone was like, what's the term, like a wonder kid or something?
Wunderkind,
I don't know. Some German means you're really smart and young, I think. Anyway, and then when he came over to the Cubs, he was like, here's my plan. It's a five-year plan. Year five of the plan, they won the World Series.
Damn.
The guy's just, I don't know. He's like, he makes being a nerd cool, which some nerds have done, actually, now that I said that out loud.
Well,
I think a lot of nerds.
Sports nerds are pretty cool. Just like, there's not as much of like, a phase of having to convince people you're cool if you know a lot about sports, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. When I see Stump the Schwab, oh boy, it is wet-ass pussy over here. Okay, so today's topic, I'm so excited we're doing. It was like one I was excited to do my research for. You are the perfect person to do it with. We are doing greatest meltdowns. And before we even get into that, Joe, I don't know if there's, and I mean this totally with love, I don't know if there's a comedian in our friend circle who has more notorious meltdowns than you. And most of them justified. Almost all of them justified. Some of them I will not name. I don't want lawsuits to be brought against me, but I've definitely been on your side for most of them. In your opinion, what is your greatest meltdown?
My greatest meltdown. Okay. I had a playing basketball in, I was like 11 years old, or no, 12 years old. It was a big game. These were like two undefeated teams. And Portage Park's gym had like this upper balcony. And all these girls were chanting Joey, and because they knew they would piss me off when I was on the free throw line. They'd be like, Joey. And these were like girls I liked, so I wasn't that mad. But these dudes I didn't like were saying some shit. So right after like a timeout, I had the basketball and I threw it into the stands trying to hit one of them in the head. So I threw a basketball into a crowd of people. And it's up into a balcony. So I launched it and I got a tech.
And
you only got a technical? I mean, that you got off pretty easy there.
So I got lucky because I think the ref heard him swearing down at me, this one kid.
And you were 11?
12. I was 12.
Wow.
I remember 10.
And were your parents there?
They were not. It was the one game they didn't show up to.
Okay. So do you feel like you felt like the leash was off a little bit more?
I would like to say that, but I've been, my dad once, I remember striking out and throwing my bat in the dugout. My dad going, we're going home. And I hit a home run earlier in that game and he made me fourth inning. Because I threw a bat, so I haven't always held back in front of him either.
Yeah,
I come
from a family of sports meltdowns.
Mm-hmm.
I would get in verbal altercations with almost every single girl I ever played tennis against, and then I started playing golf too. And so that's across. You're going to see those girls again. So then the girls I was fighting in tennis, I would then start fighting in the fall in golf. Just a real fun white girl cycle. My brother's psychos, drop kicking gloves, throwing things. My brother Michael making a jerk off signal at other 9-year-olds. He got ejected. He got thrown out of the gym. Like they said, he has to leave the building. And so then my mom and my dad was the coach, so he couldn't leave. So my dad's just inside coaching, and my mom and my brother and I are outside in the car waiting for the game to be over. CJ, I don't imagine that the Toledanos have.
No.
As much of a past as Joe and I do.
Well, I was going to ask, are these what you guys are describing, meltdowns or anger problems?
It's a combination of both. I think a meltdown is kind of when you lose control of yourself. Because I've lashed out angrily where I'm like totally in control. I know what's going on. And then there's other times where it's like, oh, I wish I did not just punch that brick wall because that now my fingers are broken. You're talking about your brother. I do remember now I was kicked out of a co-ed flag league in Chicago because my one cousin was getting real chirpy at wide receiver. He was mad that I wasn't hitting him. And I remember saying like, hey, shut the fuck up, T.O. You're not open. And he said something else. I snapped the ball and I went to like try to hit him in the back. So I like threw a bullet and I missed him and hit a girl in the shoulder.
Yeah.
And so then the ref was like, that was on purpose. And I'm like, nah, hit her. Also, she could have picked it off. Like, why didn't met me? Because she's shitty at defense. And then, you know, they told me to leave. And then I walked away from the park like Judd Nelson at the end of Breakfast Club, but instead of the fist pump, I did the middle finger all the way across Wells Park. So yeah, that was a fun one.
That's impressive. Now that we have all of these incredible stories of our own meltdowns, we will be right back with more famous people's meltdowns. we are back. There's a question I want to ask you about meltdowns. No, this is because it pertains to what we're going to get into. And it's like you end up having kind of like funny moments in all of your meltdowns because you're a comedian and you are a funny person. Do you think that makes you like, do you think people that are funny and or smart and or like kind of wise ass end up being more predisposed to having meltdowns because they know they'll get away with it or they'll like do something funny that people will remember?
Yes, I do in a way, but I also think something about funny or smart or whatever people have in meltdowns. Someone told me that because there's a difference. Someone tried to say I was an angry person once. I am not an angry person. I think my default setting is I'm a pretty happy guy. I have a bad temper, which is completely different. Like angry people walking around being like, oh, the government's out to get me and this, and this. Bad temper people, we're like, what's up? And then someone steps on our shoe and it's like, hey, dickhead, common courtesies. I think what people that have meltdowns and lash out is because we're so disappointed in other people that they're not meeting up to our standards. That's what I read once. Short tempers, we get disappointed in people. Like, that's why, like, people with road rage, it's like, I'm disappointed in how shitty my fellow are. We're supposed to be under the same set of rules. You just cut me off, you fucking idiot. And I can't tell you, I can't pull you aside and be like, listen, little guy, this is why you don't do that. So I have to scream at you. And I think that's why smart or funny people do. And I think, I don't think anything's funnier to me than overreacting. When people overreact, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore is funnier than Billy Madison. And Happy Gilmore losing his fucking mind. And Billy Madison, he's just dumb. So I had this argument about what was a better movie, Billy Madison or Happy Gilmore. It's Happy Gilmore.
No, well, it used to be Billy Madison. Now it is Happy Gilmore.
Yeah. And the thing is, our listeners, they would want that take. You know, they're happy to, that's kind of like a little appetizer. You're like, like a little one bite. Okay, thank you. I didn't know we were going to be ranking Adam Sandler movies today, too. Okay, Joe, greatest meltdowns. You are like the Ben Stein of this. So lead us off with your number three pick.
Okay, my number three is Dennis Rodman kicking a cameraman in the nuts. It was a full kick, as a lot of people know. Now, I know it feels like almost a cop-out to go with Rodman because he's such an obvious guy for having, like, meltdowns, you know, headbutted a referee and all the fights he's been in. This one in particular I like because as a psycho, when you make an embarrassing move, because in that the play, he kind of fell out of bounds, Rodman, and I think he was a little embarrassed, and he fell into the cameraman. Now, so he took his rage out on someone else, which I can identify with big time. You got to ask my wife. And so that's what he does. He tumbles over. He messed up. So instead of just being like, my bad, he sees the cameraman who's kind of in his way and then just decides, oh, this shit's on you, buddy. And then gives him like a kick, which I always thought was unfair for people to say it was in his nuts. Because if you notice, the kick was kind of underneath his thigh. So that cameraman might have a healthy pair because I think that looked like a thigh kick. But the cameraman swears he got a testicle.
See, this is how you know Joe is a psycho because he starts like being like, that's not his balls. He didn't get his ball. And it's like, well, you know, you can't kick people no matter what. It's a sensitive area. But I do think your assessment of it is correct. We hear a lot, hurt people, hurt people. And Dennis Rodman in that moment was hurt because he looked like a dumbass. And then he said, I got to hurt this guy. It's really like in a lot of these, it's people going after refs or fans that are saying stuff to him. In this situation, it really is a person truly there doing his job, which is neutral or nicer to the Bulls, and he still attacked him.
Well, I also think, though, but the media, and it's been changed over the years, sometimes the cameramen are too close. Sometimes, you know, the stanchion's too close. Or like, so they I feel like they move it back every few inches, but like, I think it was, wrong place at the wrong time. A little bit of a mixture of that.
Did he sue? Did the cameraman end up? Oh, he did.
Did, and that's why I know in the lawsuit, he like mentioned testicle. Like he said that he got nuts. And that's why I remember at the time breaking down the film with my friends. We were Bruder film where we're like, I don't think there's nuts there. Maybe he's got a long sack. He's an older guy when you get older.
A long sack?
Yeah, a long sack.
Not a long sack, DJ.
So again, if he has an extra long sack, then maybe that's his fault.
Don't have a long sack. Don't get in the way of one of the greatest rebounders of all time.
Who kicks when he rebounds.
Right?
Exactly.
I did an act out, everyone listening to the podcast via audio.
But it was a really good act out. Okay. So this episode is starting with a Bulls pick. Got it. Okay.
Already.
I know where I am. I have my bearings. I just want everyone to know I have chosen no basketball and no Bulls. So,
oh, wow. No basketball?
No basketball. I am the breath of fresh that we need. I will go next. My number three is a person. Okay, it's Tony Stewart. And he has so many bad times that I was actually watching compilation videos of him freaking out to try and pick my favorite freak out. Sadly, tragically, Tony Stewart did kill a man. And that is not on this my list because I don't think of that as a meltdown. I think of that as like manslaughter. And so if we ever do manslaughter on the episode, I will revisit this. But I wanted to keep it light and bright. So I went with one of his other classics. He gets into a wreck with Matt Kenseth and they trade paint, you know, number 42 car going after number 14 car. I love when they talk in cars. It's so fun. And so they, Tony Stewart is in a car accident. He is walking to an ambulance, takes off his helmet and chucks it at Matt Kenseth's car as he's leaving like pit row. And then he just walks into the ambulance. Like he could be injured. He just got into a car accident. And his first instinct is, how do I fuck up Matt Kenseth's day? And wow, he's since spoken about trying to get the helmet back. He was not fined for that. He's like one of those people, it's sad because you see how it did eventually end up in tragedy, where he just kept getting like a longer and longer rope, and NASCAR was like, I don't know, because even after he throws the helmet, he then like Arsenio Halls the crowd, and they love it. Like NASCAR now is different than then, but you can tell they seem almost handcuffed by his popularity, and part of his popularity is that he's a full-blown fucking psychopath. And so there were a lot of times when he should have been, I mean, there was another video. He runs up and he takes off a guy who's like an official. He takes off his headset, throws it at him. And then another official comes up like, what are you doing? And then he charges that guy. Like he's truly a bull in a china shop, but the china shop is other people and he does not care if they die.
I remember that video and it made me think to myself, it's kind of shocking that it is an irregular occurrence in NASCAR, not like the extent of what Tony Stewart did, but think about it. Their whole profession is almost car accidents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bumped like a little rear end. You have this feeling in your chest like, holy shit, like I'm scared and I'm also pissed off and mad. My car insurance going to go up. Now I'm late to whatever I'm going to be in. Take that and times it by a million. And that's NASCAR all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I always thought hockey players always had a bad headache. Have you ever almost slipped on ice?
Mm.
That's their whole job, is almost that feeling of almost slipping on ice.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they want to punch people in the face. So I'm surprised it doesn't happen more in NASCAR.
Yeah, in racing, it's like, oh, this is truly life or death. The margins are like so, so, so slim. At one point, he has a rant just ripping the entire Goodyear tire company. It's top to bottom. Mad at the entire company. I have to recommend, it's from CJ's employer, Bleacher Report. They have a ranking of Tony Stewart's top 10 tantrums.
Man, I didn't know there was so
many. And I really, and him killing a person's not even on it.
I know.
Like,
I was
that's
wondering
how
if
he... prolific he is. So I suggest you taking a look at that list. I know at one point the family of the driver he killed, I'm not sure how that ended up, but Tony will say this till the day he dies, that it was fully an accident. But you do kind of look at his record and go, an accident with a rage-induced psycho at the wheel. So that's he's from Indiana. So if it feels like I'm going extra hard at him, I am. And so that's my PSA about how scary racing is, but also fun.
All right. Okay, so my number three pick, it's got to be a tie. Only, I think these combined make a good pick, but also too, because I was going to start off with Rodman, which I should have known. You're going to start off with a Bulls one, but this one is half Bull. So the one half of it is, we still don't know the full details of the story, but Jordan punching Steve Kerr in the head in practice. Like, what did we, maybe I missed the part of why it went down in The Last Dance, other than like Steve Kerr wasn't playing up to, again, Jordan's, like he, like yeah, I don't he know. Described.
I don't know if there was a reason. I think that's why the last dance lost. No, the reason is because
he was disappointed. Jordan was disappointed.
If you can't handle my right cross in practice, how could I trust you under the bright lights of Salt Lake City?
Yeah. And what happened? He punched him, and then later on,
he buried that shot.
He buried the shot. So the second part of that was, it's like, it's Kobe, who again, very much has Jordan qualities, but he walked out. I mean, this is like a terrible roster. And I just remember this today, but he, after scrimmaging and just destroying all of his teammates, this is 2014-15 season. He walked out on everyone in practice and said, everyone's soft like Charmin, and this is why we're not winning, and just walked off the court and ended practice for that day. And on his roster, I mean, man, his last couple of years were brutal for him. Having to play with like Tariq Black, Nick Young, who, when he didn't care, Jeremy Lin after he got like a crazy contract. And yeah, these are Kobe's, like, I think he had a couple more years and he just walked down on practice, had a meltdown.
I just love how justified you both feel in your picks. Like, you're like, these are my picks and it is a meltdown, but this is why I think they're okay that they did it. And I'm like, my man is a psychopath who deserves to be in jail.
Well, I like to set these guys at a normal, and again, after the last dance, I don't know if you can do this, but they were at one point at a normal level and then it just all crumbled for them and they kind of gave up and had a little tantrum.
I think we're looking at the meltdown like, I could see why that happened.
Yeah. Or,
this person needs to be better. Real quick, did you see Paul Gasol had a daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The middle name, that's real sweet. You made me think of it with Kobe, and I know how big of Kobe fans you two were. So
Paul Gasol with the Bryant family is
very nice.
Like nothing stirs emotions in me quite like it. It's just, you know, it's such a tragedy. And then to see like, oh, wow, basketball is a community and this it is a brotherhood and it is a family. And it's just really, it's just so beautiful. And part of it is like Pau is so funny looking. Like, you know, he looks like a Disney character. He looks like the Candlestick a little bit in Beauty and the Beast. And so he's got he's Spanish. I almost was like, bonjour, but it's not that. But like the foreign and the tall, it's all great. I love it. Joe, give us your number two pick.
My number two pick is a minor league manager of the Mississippi Braves. Megan likes this one. I can see your
yes.
Who famously was ejected from a game. This was in 2006 or 2007. And I love a good manager one. There's so many good ones. Obviously, Lou Piniella has a bunch and Bobby Cox. There's some really famous ones who went off back in the day too. This one is particularly great because not only does he throw every base possible, he covers home plate up. It, with all the like the sand around the in the batter's box, covers like buries home plate like a little child. Then he goes behind the pitcher's mound and starts doing an army crawl towards the pitcher's mound, takes the rosin bag, bites it like it's a grenade, and throws the rosin bag at the umpire like a grenade. And it lands at the umpire's feet. The umpire doesn't move a muscle. He's like, I'm just going to let this guy keep hamming it up for SportsCenter. And then on his way out, he leaves through center field. So he walks through the outfield. And he kind of does like a Hulk Hogan, like revving up the crowd a little bit, pumping it up. And at that moment, I remember thinking to myself, this man's a star.
He's a legend. His name is Phil Wellman, and he has his own Wikipedia page, and it is dedicated entirely to this meltdown. This is the timeline. This was my number one pick. That's how I, if I had like Phil Wellman tattooed on my arm, we'd be worried. He covers home plate with dirt. He throws third base into the outfield. He armor crawls to the pitching mound, throws the chalk bag like a grenade. And then on his way out, he picks up second base and takes it with him. He left with second base. And the strangest thing is that all of the umps are just standing there doing nothing. Like, I feel like in baseball, we see umps that are like, oh, you're going to get in my face. I'm going to get in your face even more. Like, they get like hyped for it. And I don't know if this minor league crew was different, but they're just standing watching like an off-Broadway show. And they seem perfectly fine with everything that's happening. I guess I'm happy they didn't stop him because it is burned in my memory. And it's, I know it's a man freaking out, but it's like so delightful and funny that I think it's like a lighthearted meltdown.
Yeah, definitely lighthearted. And definitely, yeah, I think he started to like really ham it up a little bit there. But that's what made it fun. To me, it was great that it was a minor league manager because the minor leagues always have this, like anyone who's ever seen the movie Bull Durham knows the minor leagues always have like sideshow stuff. They've got like silly nights. They'll have like a Star Wars night where they encourage people to bring their own lightsabers. And they have like, you know, they have these mascots that are really just like drunks that they just give $5 to go dance on a dugout. And it's just, there's a lot of theatrics to minor league baseball. So that's why I was like, all right, it's kind of cool that they just said, keep going with it. But you knew he was mentally gone at the same time.
I mean, yeah, with also minor league baseball and just everything we've been told or like we've seen in documentaries, like how worth it is it for anyone if there isn't potential of like moving up? Like you're just going to snap at certain points. So again, like I totally get why he did this.
Oh, yeah. I bet to his players, he's like a hero too.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, you deserve that, dude.
So
you can do that.
I wonder if he was a theater major in college, because it's really like when he's army crawling, you're like, what is he? Oh my God. And then you like he had a vision. It had a full arc of a story. He blew the man up at the end. It's just so funny and good. That was my number one pick.
Wow.
So I'm going to do a little reworking. My number two pick is the John McEnroe at 1981 Wimbledon. John McEnroe, much like Tony Stewart without the manslaughter, has a long history of freaking out. And in tennis, that's the antithesis of what they want and what they think is decorum, especially at Wimbledon. Like you have to wear all white. There's strawberries, there's cream. Everyone's really quiet and rich. And it was his first round match. He went on to win the tournament. So he's obviously heavily favored. He gets a serve called out. And then he utters his famous line, "You cannot be serious," and is yelling that at the lines judge and then is screaming to everyone in the stadium and just keeps saying it over and over again. I think he was penalized like 1 point, went on to win the match. And this incident became so infamous that he named his biography, "You Cannot Be Serious, The John McEnroe Story."
It's great. I was waiting for him to get brought up.
He's the poster boy for meltdowns. When everyone thinks of a meltdown, it goes right back to McEnroe. I think Megan and I are particularly fond of him. The fact that he looks like he could be one of our uncles.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the whole Irish thing that we got going on. And yeah, the "You Cannot Be Serious" is just such a perfect thing to say to an official. Like, are you, you know, it's just like, are you, you're a joke. And
yeah.
What I remember the most is he has then made his whole post tennis career off of that. He's embraced it. So if you're a psycho listening to this podcast right now, get help, but also embrace it.
Mm-hmm. I think
the first step to solving a problem is admitting you have one, and then you could go from there.
Yeah, I think like Happy Gilmore was based off of him. I mean, like, you know, and like you talk about someone who embraced it afterwards or made it their career, like Barkley, outspoken. Like these are guys who they were like, I'm gonna continue to be myself in the game, and then when they retired, and now they have very front-facing careers after that.
I was on a Zoom call with John McEnroe recently.
Name drop.
You don't need to. My camera was off, but my name was there. Okay. So, like, there were only three of us, and my camera was off, but he felt me for sure. And my presence, honey. And he was saying that he almost feels bad for the tennis stars of today because he was kind of, not by the sport, but by outside forces and cool people encouraged, like, be yourself. If this is how you express yourself, break a fucking racket. Who cares? Do funny things. Like, be a rock star within your sport. And he feels like now, I mean, Federer wouldn't kill a spider. You know, like, Djokovic smashed a woman's esophagus last week. So he's got a little psycho in there. But tennis really, it's turned, and if you see someone do what McEnroe did back then, now it's like, oh, they're terrible. And he's like, I feel like they've been robbed of getting to be fully insane.
Yeah, it's definitely a sport that should encourage more personality. Because I feel like the most you hear about a lot of tennis stars is who they're dating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it went from McEnroe to Agassi, who was like fun tennis player, a little overrated, but he was like, oh, I wear silly hats. And this is the early 90s. I'm in Kodak commercials. But yeah, they definitely need another guy that's like a Happy Gilmore. You need someone where it's like, this guy's not from your country club.
but not Djokovic.
he took it too far. Yeah.
Yeah. He took it too far. But there was a guy who, because they come out with those like giant bags. And so you have like three or four rackets in there in case you break a string. And there was a guy a few years ago who broke, like on purpose, smashed every single one of his rackets on the ground. And having, I broke a racket, smashed it on the ground in front of my parents when I was a teen, and it felt so fucking good. But then I like looked up and I see my parents, and there I can just like see how much the racket cost in their eyes. You know, like they're like, what are you, you're losing your freshman mat. This isn't Wimbledon. Like you just cost me $270, you little bitch. But I got a new one.
That one racket was on today, and I'm now realizing Seinfeld as a TV show had two full episodes that were tennis themed.
Yeah. Kramer as the U.S. Open ball boy.
Yes. Kramer as the ball boy was hysterical. And then another one where Elaine let a boss borrow a racket and had to like try to get it back. And I'm thinking, man, Seinfeld, for a stand-up comedian, he must have been so unrelatable to all those other Manhattan comedians. He's going to tennis. He's doing all this other
stuff. Well, he was in L.A. at that point. So he was probably, these are probably L.A. stories seeping in.
Yeah, definitely like rich guy stuff. Yeah. He doesn't give that Manhattan Upper West Side guy type of vibe to me.
Right, right.
He has like the shoes of someone who likes tennis. And I mean that offensively. Okay, whoa. CJ, give us your number two.
My number two, I'm surprised this didn't make your list. Maybe your honorable mention, Megan. Bobby Knight against Purdue in 84-85, something like that. But and I still don't know if this was the one time he did it or if he had done this a few times, but he had several meltdowns. But this one is the chair, threw a chair onto the court, which then was just like parodied, or like other people when they wanted to have like fake meltdowns did it as like an homage. But Bobby Knight is, I think, king of, I guess, meltdowns for coaches.
He really is. No, that's I actually like fully forgot. I didn't. Yeah. He wasn't.
And it was against Purdue. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and Bobby Knight's a classic example of someone who behaved poorly for decades, and then he ended up being fired because I think he shoved a student who was not a basketball player, which I think if it had been 10 years earlier, they would have been like, all right. But it really felt like it was like the final straw. And then he went to Texas Tech and he acted like a psycho there too.
Yeah. With the shoving a student. Yes. It's terrible. I'm sure they were just like, it's been too much of this. Like let's start fresh. This is the last straw.
Well, and I remember the kid was like, he was walking and was like, hey, Knight, like addressed him in a way that he found disrespectful. And it's like, yeah, I'm sure this kid wanted to get a rise out of you. Like if you're 20 and you see a famous psycho, you're like, I'm going to get this guy. And then he did.
What I loved about the chair toss was how much the chair was already folded and it slid perfectly across the court. You know what I mean? It was almost like, what, shuffleboard? Like, if he would have, like, had a 20 points if I get it this far. There was no, like, awkwardness about it. Because a lot of times when you throw a chair, it's not, like, a graceful thing to throw.
Right.
But that thing was, like, perfectly slid out. Like, he would have been great at that Canadian game. What's it called? Curling or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you did some table work at your wedding. You smashed a table?
I love how these stories go, too. Yeah, remember when I got into it with another comedian? I'll admit this, everybody.
At your wedding?
I'm going to get to the wedding real quickly, but I love how stories get like I didn't smash a table, but how everything takes on a life of its own with meltdown stories. I once pushed a comedian and there was one step behind him, went down one step. 2 days later, everyone's telling me, I heard you threw him down 6 flights of stairs. What's going on? Drew Michael, everybody. I'll throw the name out there.
Oh my gosh.
Some gossip for the listeners. Yeah, but also word to the wise, don't talk shit when you're standing in front of stairs.
That's a classic crazy man phrase.
The table incident you're about at my wedding, the DJ who was recommended from other people, I saw him at other weddings and thought this guy's good. We'll go with him. The week of my wedding was like MIA. I couldn't get a hold of him. He obviously showed up, but I was like, hey, I had some email exchanges that you didn't follow through on. He's like, no, I got him. We're good. I had a do not playlist, CJ. You guys had a great band. In retrospect, that's the way to go. Because you could be like, hey, don't hit that fucking note. DJ plays a song. It's being played. I had a do not playlist and a must playlist. I'd already heard two songs in the do not playlist. So I'm already like getting mad, even though I'm still having a good time. Then I looked at the clock and I'm like, we got 20 minutes left. And I need to hear about 9 songs on the must playlist. And there was a little high top bar table, not a table that people would sit at, but a table that you just kind of rest your drink upon. And I just kind of like give it a quick flip and flipped over. And I think like one of my wife's uncles was like, hey, you know, and so a few people got upset, but not enough where most people who saw were like, Joe, even on his wedding, this guy, like, it's always on brand, right?
Well, yeah, because you want someone to feel comfortable enough on their wedding day to be who they are. And if that means flipping a cocktail table, then that's what it means.
Damn straight.
It was a really fun wedding.
Let's take a break and we'll be right back with our number one picks.
And we are back with our number one picks. And, oh, I'm first. Wow. Okay, so I had to do some moving around, so I don't have any honorable mention.
Okay.
So my number one pick is Mike Tyson, fill in the blank, biting Evander Holyfield's ear. June 28th, 1997, they are in their heavyweight rematch. And during the third round, Tyson bites his ear. He had had a biting history too. Like, I didn't realize that he was a biter. He ended up being disqualified. He got like a chunk of it out. I mean, it's very strange and terrifying. He ended up being disqualified, suspended from boxing, but that didn't stop his meteoric continued rise to fame. And that pisses me off. I get it. Listen, I know that there's people that like Mike Tyson. We seem to really forget that he was convicted of raping a woman. And I don't think we need him anymore. I hangover. Fuck you. It's just like everything that he touches to me is tarnished. And I hear people in the sports world who I really, really respect speak positively about him, and it really pisses me off. So, yeah, he sucks. And I just don't understand how he keeps... It's like, he has a face tattoo. He was so funny in this movie. It's like, wow, have you forgotten every single thing? Joe, I'm so happy to see you shaking your head in agreement with me.
I don't know if you remember, I used to have a joke where I talked about how people were saying that... Like, remember when Tiger Woods cheated on his wife a bunch of times?
Mm-hmm.
There was like a poll on CNN, will America forgive him? And I'm like, forgive him. I mean, we forgave Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
We forgave Mike Tyson. Like, literally, you're right. You said he was convicted of rape. I almost wonder, do these people forget about it? Because, yeah, he bit someone's ear off. He was a rapist. And it is insane to me how everyone just forgets about that, especially in today's climate. And I almost wonder if it's just people ignoring it because he was so dominant.
I don't even think it's boxing related. I think they think he is like a funny entertainer. I love PTI. It is like the basis of everything. I listen to it every single day on the podcast. And they love him in a way that I'm like, you guys are usually like pretty good, especially the stuff that's been going on right now. And it angers me and it makes me want to like contact them and be like, please stop. Mike Tyson's son, who I know is innocent in all of this, is an intern for them. Like, they say Mike Tyson, they're like, he is the most entertaining, charismatic, likable athlete of all time. And I'm like, am I on an alternate planet right now?
I think what's happened is because we watched him for a decade be this incredible fighter. And then that stuff had happened. And then he came back as like a pop culture cameo. And they're like, look at him. He's funny. He's like reformed. But I don't know. There was no ever like process really of like any sort of like reformation or like, you know, lessons learned. But I think that's why it was like at one point we were all scared of him. But now he's like a tiger that you could put your hand in his mouth.
And I listen, I don't want to be called a hypocrite because we obviously talked about Kobe earlier in the episode. And listen, Kobe had a very similar bad thing happen. And I think through his death, we've learned how remorseful he was and how much he admitted fault in that situation. And I don't even want to bring in like he wasn't convicted, because it's like that actually doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's how you react from that. And I think Kobe took it and said, I'm going to be an amazing father. And I admit to this woman that I thought one thing was happening, but another thing was happening. And I did rape her. And I am like so sorry for that. I know this is like getting heavy, but I guess it's similar in that instance, but they're so dissimilar in how they handled it afterwards. I don't think being cast in a movie is a redemption. I don't think that means you show remorse. I think working for women's basketball and for your daughters and for doing everything in your power to uplift the women in your life. And when all the women around you say and can vouch for you, I think that is actual redemption. And it does not erase it, but at least it's a path forward. And I don't think Mike Tyson has done anything to deserve the path forward that he's been granted.
Yeah, I agree 100%. He didn't atone for anything. I feel like he didn't do nearly enough jail time for it. He comes back from it, has the meltdown of the biting the ear thing. I mean, this was after.
That was after?
This big comeback. Like in a big historic comeback. He was a voice on a Simpsons episode, I believe, afterwards, too. And because I think it was like 91, 92 he was in jail. I'm not exactly positive, so I hope I'm not wrong. And then the Holyfield thing was the comeback, because everyone was like, this fight should have happened in their primes. They were both a little bit older, so that was like the whole thing. That's, I think, the whole story of every boxing match. These two should have fought 5 years ago, but Don King got on the way or whatever. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think Kobe, yeah, it was a horrible thing, but it seems like every decision in his life afterwards was to atone for that. And yeah, with a lot of giving back, where I've not really seen that. I think you said it best, CJ, he's become like a character, and everyone just acts like he's this lovable cartoon, but I don't really see him that way either.
I'm glad that I'm on an alternate planet, but at least you guys are here with me. That makes me feel better, because I thought I was just truly living on Mars, but I got some good ones. All right. Okay. CJ, you give us your number one pick.
Well, that was going to be my number one pick.
We should have talked to each other before.
No. But that's what happens. But
I thought CJ was just going to pick, someone, you know, throwing a pizza at someone three times.
Now my alternate pick, which is by no means, I think, my number one, but I want to mention the Knicks in a way. Like at some point when we talk about meltdowns, like I think there's a few things, but the couple that I remember is one, again, I think the Knicks, I think John Starks sort of melting down physically in his performance, and Spike Lee, like the whole choking, that was like one. But and then there was one in 2012 that I always loved to, whenever the game is over and like someone messed up, I love hearing the stories like in the locker room. So this one is after, I think, the game two, 2012 first round Knicks Heat. And this is the season that Jeremy Lin played for the Knicks, had Linsanity, but then got hurt, and Carmelo and Amari were back, and Amari punched a fire extinguisher and took himself out of the series. And then a few years later, LeBron punched a chalkboard after, I think, was it the 2018 finals?
It was after the JR, which is kind of like a brain meltdown, which JR had.
And you talked about it early, just as like a general example of just players punching things. Like we just love to punch things or punch a hole in the wall. And yeah, I just like when it's a specific object, like a fire extinguisher. So I just wanted to mention that. By no means the greatest, but it was a fun one to mention.
Well, I think the Knicks are a great pick because they are sort of a organizational meltdown. They feel
in
like
every corner.
They feel like they're in free fall, but they've been that way for now decades. Like at some point, are they going to hit the ground? They just keep being like, and they never splat. Which I guess is good for them that they don't splat, but being a fan of theirs seems very difficult.
Exhausting.
Yeah, exhausting. John Starks did headbutt. A lot of headbutts in the sports meltdown world. So honorable mention to all the headbutts out there.
All right, Joe, why don't you bring us home with your number one pick?
All right, my number one definitely feels like a little too Chicago for me.
Please.
But this guy was like a hero of mine for a good few years there. Megan, you probably had a run-in with him when you were interning for NBC Sports Chicago. It's one Carlos Zambrano.
Zambrano. I had a run-in with Zambrano's cousin.
Oh, you can't just leave us on that one. What was the...
He just like stared at my butt intensely when I was in the locker room. And but I remember being like, who is that? And they were like, Zambrano's cousin. Like, why the fuck is he even here?
Cousin. Yeah, who cares? That's like the worst part of the entourage. A cousin. Turtle looked at your ass. So Zambrano had a game in which he did everything you could do as a baseball player. It was a play at the plate after giving up a big lead, and the Cubs were really scuffling at this point. It looked bang, bang. Umpire called him safe. Zambrano immediately pointed at the umpire. Like, I think you say, are you blind piece of fucking shit? You pretty much, I don't know how you guys are with swearing on this podcast.
We love
but
it.
That's exactly what he said. You could read his lips clear as hell. The ump ejects him. Zambrano then does the, oh, I'm out of the game? No, you're game. That's like, you can't fire me because I quit. That's that equivalent. Then Zambrano takes the baseball. Now, mind you, he has a round home plate. He chucks it into the bleachers. Real, like, 60-foot throw, which is, like, look, pitchers have strong arms, so it's not, like, unheard of to be that strong. Trevor Bauer last year in a game threw the ball from the mound over the center field wall in Kansas City, which that's a good meltdown, too. People should look that up.
He's fun, though. He's had kind of like a fun track after that.
Well, what I loved about the Bauer thing, and I'll get back to Zambrano, Terry Francona comes out and he's already like, what the fuck was that? Like before he even gets to the mound. And Bauer puts his hand on Francona's shoulder and be like, I'm really sorry. Like, and then they traded him like 2 days later.
Yeah.
So. But Zambrano then goes into the dugout, does the classic. CJ, you're talking about punching a fire extinguisher. Punching is always hilarious. He boxes the water, the Gatorade.
I remember this now.
And then threw some balls onto the field, went into the dugout. He didn't fight a teammate this time, but Zambrano was notorious for fighting. He got into a fight with Derek Lee and Michael Barrett. He gave like 9 stitches in the mouth to. Zambrano was like a 6'5", 260 pound. He's a tight end in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He was a pitcher and a psycho. Mm-hmm. And then in the post game, they asked the Cubs manager at the time, who I believe was Lou Piniella, who's pretty famous for
his own meltdowns.
Yeah. They said, did you talk to Big Zambrano? What did Big Z have to say? And he said, oh, he says he's retiring.
I love him.
Favorite of Mel do, because I've had that on stage where I go, you know what? Fuck cop. I should have taken the fireman's test. I hate all you people. And I've told them times when I've had those meltdowns, like, none of you are fucking special. Go see a band, you losers. And then like you walk off and you tell the other producers, I'm never doing this shit again. I relate to this was so bad. I can never show my face in this world again.
What is it about baseball where you're allowed to just have like, the game is slow and like, because dugout freakouts and meltdowns are always on 11, like just crazy.
CJ, I really think it's because it's every day. They see each other every day for 162 games. The spring training now starts in mid-February in a regular non-global pandemic year. Starts in like early February, pitchers and catchers report mid-February. And then if you're a good team, you're going through October every day. So I think like when things start to go bad, and it's a hard sport. It's not like basketball or football where your athleticism could overcome some stuff. In baseball, if you're slumping, it's harder to overcome.
I also think in the dugout, there's so many props. Like, there's balls to throw. In basketball, you see someone, you know, get like a Gatorade bottle and chuck it or a towel. But like, baseball, there's shelves in there, you know? Like, they can fuck it up like they're in someone's home, almost. But yeah, Zambrano, Lou Piniella, like, I honestly feel honored that I even got to be around that era of Chicago baseball, because obviously what was happening on the South Side was pure craziness too. Ozzie Guillen and Jay Mariotti could have their own greatest meltdown list. It was really a fun time of psychos, but innocent psychos.
Yeah, I thought about like maybe an Ozzie Guillen. Ozzie Guillen never turned it off. He was always that. Mm-hmm. And I think for a true meltdown, you have to have moments where you seem level-headed and then you just go off the deep end. So I almost felt like Ozzie Guillen was someone I kind of avoided. Ron Artest, I'm surprised none of us threw him out there. Medical piece.
Well, we just love him so much, I think.
They have malice at the palate. I don't think that's a meltdown. I think he had something thrown at him and he reacted to it. So.
That's true too.
Everyone, Ben Wallace pushed him.
Yeah. Thank you, CJ. That was a meltdown. CJ knows where my allegiance lies. Joe, you'll love this. Today was the first day I'd left the house in 4 days. And you know how it gets out here, but it's worse right now. Guys, if you are able to, I know there's a lot of things to help right now, but if there's any way you can help the Red Cross with the wildfires out here, I bring that up to say I did drive by Dodger Stadium. The visibility is very, very bad right now, especially like higher up in the air. And I saw not one, but two planes circling Dodger Stadium with signs making fun of the Astros who are in town. So they said, you know what, we may not be able to see, but we got to get these puppies in the air. And the one that I was able to read said, good luck stealing this sign, Astros cheaters. And I just love that even in the midst of a terrible natural disaster and global pandemic, we still find a way to say fuck you to the Astros. And that's actually what America needs right now.
Damn straight. We don't need a government that helps its citizens. We need more people shitting on the Astros.
Yeah, because that comes from the right place. You know, you cheated, you stole, fuck you. If we could all get on the right side of that.
How are they able to keep that World Series championship?
Because baseball is one of my favorite sports, but it is run by the dumbest human beings. Actually, someone floated the idea of Theo Epstein becoming the next commissioner of baseball.
Wow.
Because he's... What else did Theo Epstein need to accomplish? Mm-hmm. I mean, Cleveland Indians haven't won a World Series in 7 years. I guess he could go there and save that damn base. They're just run by stupid people. And I agree with you, Megan. It's nice that we're coming together over this. What is particularly awesome is it seems like everyone that the Astros wronged is having a great year. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers are dominating. Yu Darvish, who's on my beloved Cubs, they cheated against him. They crushed him in that World Series. And they did the, remember... This is, I could do this for you guys. Remember the one guy did the eye thing?
Yeah, yeah. He didn't Asian do eyes. It. He didn't do it. You didn't do it.
For the record, Joe did not do it. He just, he said the eye thing and held his in.
Just want to make sure it's a podcast. Joe is a good man.
Yeah, I didn't actually do it. I was trying to remind, I didn't know what to call that. What do you call that?
A visual slur.
Yeah.
Thank you. You did the visual slur thing. So you, Darvish, like, that was a bad World Series for me to deal with all the questions about how do you feel about this guy insulting your heritage to, I don't know what happened. I was one of the best pitchers in baseball, and it's like they know what's coming. So the Cubs signed him the following year. He went from that World Series in 2017 to the Cubs in 2018. He was terrible his first year with the Cubs because he was trying to fix a problem that didn't exist.
Aww.
He thought he had he thought he was tipping his pitches. He goes, aww, there must be something in my mechanics that tell the hitter when a curveball's coming. So I have to change the way I pitch because I'm going to get rocked. It turns out, no, they were using high technology to cheat against you. And now that Darvish knows that, since the Astros have been exposed, Darvish is 7-2 with he's second in the league in ERA. He's second in strike. He's a Cy Young candidate. And it's awesome to see because all these people were like, oh, he's done, when really he was just a victim of a cheating scandal.
Wow.
It's like when you're doing a show and you're like, God, I'm really, they just do not like me. And you're like, what am I doing wrong? And then you go back to the green room and they're like, oh, you know, everybody's from Sweden. And you're like, well, what the fuck? I didn't know everybody was from. Now I feel so much better. I thought I was terrible at comedy. They don't speak English. So I'm actually fine. And that, yeah, I relate to you, Darvish, in that way. I'm happy he's having a redemption story. The Astros. What a representation of a lot of things that's wrong. And I loved that little guy, Altuve. I wanted to put him in my pocket, carry him around. I thought he was so freaking cute.
But he's the worst. He's the worst of them, isn't he?
I think he's up there.
Yeah.
I think he's freaking up there. Joe, where can our listeners find you? I know our listeners will love
you, have a lot of
you
fun stuff
and your
going
podcast
on.
And all of your social media.
Yeah, so I have a podcast. It was called Kilgallen's Pub. It still kind of is, but I just call it the Joe Kilgallen Podcast now just to make it easier for people to search, kind of recreate bar conversations. Both CJ and Megan have been on and they've been fantastic. And I also, my YouTube channel, I upload a lot of videos, podcast clips, a ton of almost 3 hours of stand-up clips are on there now. And TikTok, I post a lot of stuff on TikTok. My Twitter, if you're looking for comedy, don't go to Twitter because I just tweet about the Cubs now.
Cubs recap. CJ and I watch your Cubs recap every day. He'll go, we got a new Cubs recap.
So today's was kind of funny because the Bears had just won. The no-hitter happened. And I had 4 or 5 friends in my garage. And they're all yelling, Danny Callis and Bobby Buds are yelling, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself, in the background. And they're just being idiots. You're,
oh boy. I mean, okay. Final thoughts. What do you think the Bears record's going to be?
Honestly, I was hoping for 4-12 and we could get the first pick. I want that Lawrence kid to be the quarterback. I don't think Mitch Trubisky is ever going to be a consistent enough quarterback to win playoff games. I don't think Nagy's the guy either. So the quicker we figure this out and restart, Pace is not a good GM. He's made some decent mid-round draft picks, but his first-round picks have been busts. And yeah, I'm just kind of done with this era of Bears football. So even though I want them to win every game, I'm not holding out high hopes.
Okay, you're hoping for a few wins.
That's the thing with baseball, it's such a long season, you just kind of hope for, you could get lightning in a bottle. In football, once you're 0-3, that's your season essentially. Mm-hmm. And then you have to sit through 15 more weeks of just bad football. So I don't really, and it's not like fun like basketball where you could root for individuals to take over. I love Allen Robinson, but we have a bad quarterback. So I'm not expecting Allen Robinson to put up great stats. Where in basketball, some guy could just take over and be like, my team sucks, but I'm going to put up 30 tonight.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. So that's why football, when your team's bad, it's rough. And I'm not doing fantasy football this year.
Yeah, me either. I said no to all of it. The Bears are 1-0 though. So they're already disappointing you. Even through winning. And I think that's really beautiful. You can find me at Megan Gailey, at Better Megan Gailey on Instagram. There'll be all new Bubble Machine on Thursday. CJ?
At CJ Toledano on everything. And yeah, just be tweeting.
You'd be tweeting.
Yep.
We're just happy to be here. Happy to do this show for you guys. Please rate. Please write the reviews. I love those. A man mentioned my voice in it, said it was good. You should read YouTube because they disagree. Write anything you want. Hello. Fuck you. The Colts are terrible. I hope Philip Rivers' 9 kids beat you up. Anything. I just want to correspond. Put a message in a bottle. Thank you so much for listening. Please be safe and make sure you're registered to vote. And we will see you next week. The Greatest is a production of iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.